Chapter 22.
Nakari and I ran for the tree line right away, making the strategic decision to let Drusel trail behind. We were expendable to the bounty hunters, but she was not. From this angle, the ships couldn't fire at us without a risk of hitting her first. She effectively served as a shield and allowed us to reach cover. The bounty hunters would have to land and come after us on foot, which would not be as easy. When we reached the cover of the canopy, Nakari removed her slug thrower from her back and checked to make sure it was still functional after the dunk in the lagoon. Satisfied, she drew her blaster and tossed it to Drusel.
"I think you should stay with Drusel and head for the high ground there," she said, pointing to a promontory to the south. "I'll flank out to your side and take shots at whoever follows you."
"But what if they follow you?" I asked.
"I'm taking the droid, and our tracks will make that clear. They'd never believe we'd split up and put their big money target under the protection of an astromech, right? So they'll chase you, and I'll pick them off. You just move as fast as you can."
I nodded. "Right," I said, and we both took a couple of steps in different directions, thinking only of the mission. But then we stopped, thinking of each other, turned back, and froze. Both of us waited for the other to speak first, and we each made one or two halting starts simultaneously, which caused us to stop and wait for the other to continue, and the awkwardness escalated with every fraction of a second, not to mention the terror. I was mortified that whatever I said next would be precisely the wrong thing, either too much or too little, just wholly inappropriate and not what she wanted to hear. Nakari must have been feeling something similar, and I wanted to say she didn't need to worry. She could say anything to me, but even that would probably be wrong.
"What is happening?"
Drusel asked.
"I am unfamiliar with this kind of human behavior. Have you lost the power of speech?"
"No," Nakari said, and she closed the distance between us in three long strides. Her head darted forward, lips kissing mine briefly, and then our gazes met. "Be safe, Luke."
It was a very safe thing to say compared to all the other phrases I had been considering, so I nodded with some relief and replied, "You too."
"That was astoundingly straightforward,"
Drusel commented, her confusion clear.
"What was the difficulty that prevented you from expressing such commonplace wishes?"
The Given's words evoked embarrassed smiles from both of us, but I was grateful to Drusel for saying them anyway. Nakari's eyes spoke volumes to me, and I hope mine communicated as much to her. What I said, however, was, "No time to explain." And I broke eye contact with Nakari to witness the landing of the first of the bounty hunters on the beach. "We have to go." Thinking of the extensive catalog offered by Uthiel Outfitters on Rhodia, as well as many other businesses throughout the galaxy, I gave some final instructions to my droid. "R2, make sure you're scanning in the infrared and other channels besides the visual, and let Nakari know if you see something she doesn't. These bounty hunters are sure to have some tricks in their arsenal." He acknowledged with a short electronic burp, and his dome rotated to face the lagoon. We truly did part after that, and Drusel followed behind me as I picked a path through the trees toward the southern hill. I hoped we weren't rushing to the edge of a cliff. Having so many other things demanding my attention on our flight, I hadn't committed the topography of the island to memory. I hadn't even gotten a very good look at it, beyond tagging it as an emergency landing spot. While we headed due south, Nakari and R2 swung southeast. In space, that can magnify quickly into vast distances, but on foot, on a small island, it was only the difference of 100 meters. Nakari was silent in the forest, but R2 made enough noise for both of them. Astromechs are the opposite of stealthy, and are ill-suited to moving cross-country across a largely rocky island covered with a thin layer of fern-dusted soil. The trees were unable to send roots deeply into the stone, so those roots trailed like wooden snakes above the ground, ready to trip us up and slow the progress of rolling droids. Their white trunks were understandably thin, but their canopies of broad leaves cast ample shade. When I took a brief moment to check my trail, I saw that Drusel's head was in constant motion, small jerks like those of a bird. "What are you doing?" I asked.
"Gathering data."
A mechanical whine announced the approach of a swoop bike. One of the bounty hunters must have unloaded one from his ship, thinking to get to us first. The question of when precisely the newer arrivals would turn on one another was a good one. I hoped it would be sooner rather than later. If they focused on getting us first and then fighting through their competition, that would be to our detriment. Far better for them to cannibalize early and reduce their numbers. "Incoming!" I told Drusel, halting for the moment and turning around. "Use a tree for shelter and minimize your profile. I'll present myself as a target." I took a step to the right and spied the skimmer cutting through the trees toward us. It was piloted by a human with goggles strapped to his head, a dark cloak streaming behind him.
"My friend, there is no need," Drusel said.
"What do you mean?" A crack sounded, and the bounty hunter tumbled from the skimmer, sending the vehicle into an uncontrolled dive that resulted in a loud collision with the ground that was half crunching metal and half cracking bones and pulped tissue. A secondary explosion of startled birds from the nearby trees shuddered the air.
"Your mate is an exceedingly good sniper," Drusel said. "The odds were high she would eliminate the threat before we had cause to worry."
"My mate?" I said, spinning on my heel to resume running for high ground.
"Are you not mated?"
"I don't know. Whatever we are, just don't call it that, okay? I think that might be the worst possible word to describe a human relationship." I picked up my pace as if I could put physical distance between myself and her word choice.
"The definition has been quite clear and basic for many years,"
Drusel persisted, close on my heels.
"Is there another word that humans use among themselves?"
"Yeah, pretty much anything else."
"My sincerest apologies,"
Drusel said, her tone solicitous.
"I was unaware of that word's potential to cause psychological trauma in your species."
"It's fine. Let's just move on. There are still 5 bounty hunters, and we have a hill to climb."
"There is little cover beyond the thin trunks of the trees and the occasional flowering shrub,"
Drusel observed.
"These ferns do not even rise to our knees, attractive as they may be."
"We'll have to take what advantage we can of the trees," I said. "And I want you flat on the ground when the shooting starts. Disappear into the ferns." She didn't answer, probably because the exertion of jogging uphill had us both winded. When we did achieve the summit, I noted with satisfaction that it wasn't the edge of the island. The hill sloped back down to the water on the other side. There was also an outcropping of boulders nearby that might serve as cover should we need to retreat that way. I didn't want to head there now, however. We had a good field of vision from this spot, and little chance of the bounty hunters flanking us from behind. This island was unfamiliar terrain to them as well. "Let's set ourselves up behind some trees here," I said, moving to one nearby that afforded a good view down the slope.
"It would be preferable to choose one a little lower,"
Drusel said. "Why?"
"Your, Nakari Kellen's field of fire would be clearer there."
"How would you know? You don't even know where she is." Nakari had taken cover along with R2 somewhere off to our right, and presumably downhill from our location.
"I do not need that information to decide where to place ourselves. Plot the trees or obstructions on a grid, calculate vectors, taking into account variations in elevation, of course, and it becomes clear that a small descent on our part will maximize her efficacy."
"All right, then. Tell me where we should take cover." Instead of answering verbally, Drusel picked her way downhill, perhaps 10 meters, and knelt behind a white-barked tree with black spots of old fallen branches, against which her pale head was perfectly camouflaged. She pointed to one immediately adjacent, indicating that I should plant myself there. Crouching down as I moved, I confirmed visually that we could see the lower ground to our right a bit better from here, and presumably Nakari could see us a little better too, and anyone approaching our position. The air grew still. The birds had already taken flight, presumably to a quieter patch of the island or to another island entirely, and even the drone of insects tapered off. I didn't think there were any mammals either to disturb us or to be disturbed. I doubted there was a source of fresh water on the island except whatever rain fell. The hush and tension of a hunt is the wrong kind of excitement when you're the one being hunted. There had to be at least one bounty hunter approaching us now on foot, if not more. But I saw no movement in the trees and heard nothing but the faint hum of ships powering down in the lagoon or else idling their engines, ready for a quick takeoff. Checking on Drusel, I noted that she was not unfamiliar with how to handle a blaster. She was even practicing proper trigger discipline, keeping her finger outside the guard for the time being. Seconds ticked by in near silence, and I thought I picked up a low mechanical whir, but that was off to my right and might have been R2. It was R2, in fact. He shot a bolt from his ion blaster, the attachment we'd installed on Deenan to disable Drusel's security droid, directly across our vision from right to left. The white electronic bolt splashed and crackled against an egg-shaped obstruction, which fizzed and popped and then melted away, revealing a Rodian bounty hunter who had been advancing upon us using a stealth field generator attached to his belt. He was fast. He leveled his blaster and squeezed off three quick shots at the source, hitting at least once, judging by R2's high-pitched scream. He never got off a fourth shot. With his stealth field neutralized, Nakari could see him, and she sent a slug through his eye that exploded the back of his head like a jogan fruit. Two down, four to go. I hoped R2 wasn't seriously damaged. I saw a thin trail of smoke rising through the trees, revealing his position. But he was also chattering angrily, so clearly he wasn't completely out of commission. The problem was that he was making himself an easy target, and Nakari too, if she was hiding nearby. It would be smart to put some distance between herself and the droid. Drusel commented on the problem.
The damage to your droid reduces our tactical advantage. Seeing what happened to their colleagues and having a plain target to follow now, the remaining bounty hunters may attack our partners instead of ascending the hill. They could then attempt to flank us. At any rate, Nakari's ability to surprise is negated at this point.
Maybe we can surprise them, I said in a low voice, and pointed at two tan-skinned bipeds dressed for the desert. See there? Two more of them advancing through the trees, working together as a team. Weequay.
I have never encountered the species before.
Tough hides, naturally resistant to blaster fire. The Hutts like to use them as bodyguards and bounty hunters. Drusel looked down, considering her weapon.
If they are resistant to our blasters, what can we do?
Resistant doesn't mean invulnerable. Nakari will have a better chance of knocking them down with a slug, of course, but we can probably wound them. Just firing at them will draw Nakari's attention, and theirs, and she can pick them off while we keep them busy.
If she has the best chance of prevailing, then we should let her take it. If you will permit me an observation, there are six functioning ships back at the lagoon to steal. Our odds of surviving without stealing one are quite low.
Bounty hunters are paranoid, I said, shaking my head. They'll have identity locks on their ignition sequence, and maybe even traps installed so that no one else can fly their ships.
So, you're with the galaxy's best slicer,
Drusel said, and then she shrugged at my reaction.
Or one of the best, if I'm being modest. Let my injudicious expression of confidence reassure rather than shock you. Get us back to the beach alive, Luke Skywalker, and I will get us a ship.
How much time would you need?
If they are extraordinarily equipped, I may need as much as half an hour, no more. If a certain ship looks too difficult and we are pressed for time, however, we can simply choose another. The odds that all of them will have time-consuming security to overcome are small.
All right. We'll head back to the lagoon. But we need to take out those Weequay first. Maybe that Rhodian will have some extra weapons I can use.